Well, I'm certainly privileged and honored to be the first speaker in this symposium. There's really an all-star lineup of stink bug experts here, and some of them I have met for the first time this morning, so I'm very excited about that and excited to hear the dynamic speakers that will follow me. So let's go ahead and get to it. I was charged with giving this introductory talk and talking about stink bugs as metapest. Dr. Bob McPherson was co-presenter. I sent this presentation to him. He okayed it, so that was encouraging, at least for me. But let's talk about stink bugs this morning. When you look up the root word meta in Latin, that means back again, change. So stink bugs are definitely back, and we've certainly been looking at them very earnestly in the last decade or so in row crop production, specifically cotton, soybeans, and those crops that stink bugs tend to proliferate on profusely. But when you do a search for stink bug online, you can find all kinds of things. Stanley the stink bug goes to camp. I have two small kids, and I don't know how I missed this. It was a 2005 film with the voice talents of Tim Conway and Don Knotts, so I'll have to check this out. But you find all kinds of things. Evidently, there's a book series called The Bug Parables, and Stink Bug Saves the Day, The Parable of the Good Samaritan. So there's a lot of things you can see. And of course, there's a little comedy as well in the form of comic strips online. And then, what you think is funny, others, you might not think it's so funny. So anyhow, I guess I followed the guideline of starting a presentation with something humorous now, put you to sleep. But pentatomidae, we all know what it means. We can look up those word roots and understand what they mean, penta five. Tomos cut section, and I'm not certain myself. Maybe some of you are as to why that applies to stink bugs. But there are a lot of fives when it comes to stink bugs. Five segmented antennae. The bodies, of course, look like they're five sectioned with this scutellum, the pronotum, the hemi elytra, the hardened portions, and the membranous wing portion. The adults are shield shaped, which would have a five sided. Appearance. The pronotum has got five distinct sides. So anyhow, there are a lot of fives that go with the pentatomid group, and it certainly applies. Now, we're going to talk a little bit about diversity and the biology, and I feel like I'm preaching to the choir here talking about the biology, so we'll skim over that stuff as a brief overview. But there are almost 5,000 species that have been described worldwide, so a very diverse group. I'm going to confine most of my comments to North America. North of Mexico, where we have over 200 species that have been identified and worked with. And of those species, really a handful or so are economically important regularly and the ones that we have to deal with in managing in row crop agriculture. But if we're going to talk about basic biology of stink bugs, we'll just quickly cover some of these things. We've got phytophagous and predaceous species, and in the last decade or so, we've spent a great deal of time educating stakeholders in row crop production agriculture about stink bugs, and one of the basic things is to be able to differentiate between predaceous and plant feeding species. So we've done a great job, I think, in doing that. Even as experts, we can put some of these bugs side by side, and you really have to have a good discerning eye or have worked with these things to be able to tell them apart. You've got the spine soldier bug adult here and the dusky brown. You've got the spine soldier bug immature. You've got the red banded immature. So there are a lot of similarities and a lot of challenges to stakeholders that are not as proficient in working with bugs as us. But most of the species are phytophagous and very polyphagous, and we're going to spend the rest of the time talking about those. And we all know how stink bugs feed. They cause three primary modes of damage to seeds that they're interested in. They cause the physical destruction, the mechanical destruction. They allow microorganisms to gain entry into that site and cause decay. And then they also cause physiological injury with the extraoral digestion, with the enzymes. Part of my group is actually looking at these enzymes and their effect on plant volatiles, plants emitting volatiles, specifically cotton right now, and it's very interesting. Those enzymes are very important in that process. Some of the main players, the southern green stink bug, Nazara, also known as the green vegetable bug in other parts of the world, such as Australia, very important species. The green stink bug is certainly one of the species important in North America, as is Eustachys cervus. And there are a lot of other species that are important or are gaining importance. The red-banded stink bug, the Piazzadorus, tropical species, a Gulf Coast state species in the United States. I think this one is adapting and moving northward. In my last 3 years at Clemson in South Carolina, I've seen more and more of these every year in soybeans. So it's a species that I think we're going to see more and more of, and it's very difficult to control with insecticides. And then rice stink bug and rice and other species here as well that are important. And there is a great diversity, a lot of different looks, a lot of different critters, a lot of different crops. So they are definitely mega and meta pests. Multivoltine, we have multiple generations of stink bugs, of course, depending upon temperature and location of occurrence. That affects the life cycle and distribution. As an example, winter mortality in the United States, you look at something like the green stink bug and the brown stink bug, which pretty much cover the lower 48. And then the southern green stink bug is aptly named because of its distribution in more southern areas of the country. And the winter line and freeze line has a lot to do with that. But life stages, we know a lot about the biology of these insects, and picking on the southern green stink bug, we know it takes 35 to 40 days to go from egg to adult. We know the overwinters adults, the first instars don't need to feed, so there's a lot about their biology that we understand and know. We do know that they have a tremendous impact on agriculture as a whole, and I'm going to talk just briefly about cotton. Dr. Philip Roberts will be up later to go in more detail about cotton. He'll give you a very good talk on that. But in cotton, as an example, in the last decade, 12 years or so, we have basically just reduced the amount of broad-spectrum insecticides that we use in that production system. And this relates to several factors. The boll weevil eradication program has been successful. We no longer spray for boll weevil. We're more into selective insecticide chemistry. Targeting the Lepidopterous group of insects. That would be with the foliar insecticides and would also, for a large part, be BT cotton. These implant selective insecticides that give us very good control of leps. It's basically allowed us to reduce broad spectrum insecticide use for those major pests and remove the coincidental control that we used to see on stink bugs. So, again, not to belabor the point because Dr. Roberts will talk about it more, but stink bug abundance in cotton in the southeast is a good example, and he'll show you this slide later and expand more on it. But basically, you know, we used to spray a lot, and we don't spray as much now. So they definitely benefit from that reduction in insecticide use and have certainly become more prominent. You look at all of these charts I'm going to show you now on major row crops are from 2002 from the USDA website. But I think they're useful in that it illustrates a point that we've got a lot of crops. And again, I'm limiting my comments to the lower 48 in the United States. But picking on cotton again here, you see the southern belt. Stink bugs have a broad range from which to move on cotton. Look at soybeans. Again, there's an intense agriculture in the upper Midwest. But we've got a lot of cotton down in the southeast and the mid-south, so there's a lot of room for stink bugs to move in this preferred host plant. Corn, again, intensive agriculture in the upper Midwest. But again, this is 2002. In 2008, we've got a lot more corn planted down in the mid-south and in the southeast, so certainly a very important host for stink bugs. Sorghum, again, there's a lot more sorghum up in the southeast and the mid-south, and we'll hear more about that today. Rice, we talk about the rice stink bug. It's pretty much confined to the Mississippi River areas, but certainly an important species in rice. And look at wheat, and again, in 2008, we've got a lot more wheat in this part of the country as well as some of the more northern regions. 5 minutes. Peanuts, stink bugs are not a major pest in peanuts, but it's certainly an important host. And we'll hear more about that today. Vegetables all over the country. You look at the number of nursery, greenhouse, floriculture, vegetable seeds, and so forth. There's a lot of room for stink bugs to use that as well. Total land, crop land devoted to, or total percent of land and acres of crop land. You know, a large part of our country is devoted to crop land and gives stink bugs a lot of room to move. Most of my experience has been in the southeast and the mid-south, and I just define them as major or moderate pests in most of these major row crops, so they're certainly important. In the next couple of minutes, let me just briefly talk about the future research and educational efforts that I foresee that we'll need to get a better grasp on, better understanding of landscape and how that impacts stink bugs. Say field two here, surrounded by peanuts, corn, peanuts, soybean, woods. You think stink bugs are going to be important in this field? Well, certainly. And all of these hosts have a very large impact on stink bug numbers developing in that field. That's kind of a small scale. What about coordinated management efforts on a larger scale? I had a student in Arkansas that demonstrated that in early maturing soybeans and later maturing soybeans, they had to be at least a kilometer away or within a kilometer's distance from a field of interest. They impacted that field, that later maturing soybean field. So we're operating in kilometers instead of feet or meters with these insects. They can certainly handle large distances, and we certainly need a better grasp of that. Revisit the importance of natural enemies. There'll be a talk about that later. You know, these parasitoids and predators, how important are they? Do we need to conserve them and augment when we can? There's certainly avenues that we can take to better aid natural enemies in helping us regulate populations of stink bugs. High-tech solutions for detection and management of stink bugs. We can smell them. So can we detect them and find them with their smell? Certainly an opportunity there. Wish the sound was hooked up in here. We're playing stink bug sounds now. They have intraspecific air substrate-borne sounds inaudible to us. They use as close-range communication for courtship and such. So perhaps we can use those cues to find bugs in the field and better manage them. So in summary, last slide. Stink bugs are definitely metapests. They're here. We've been dealing with them very intensely for the last decade or so. Again, the epitome of prolificus species. And the importance of stink bugs certainly is regional, associated with these cropping structures and succession of hosts. And we have got to have a better understanding of that if we're going to be able to manage these things in a more regional farmscape type approach. So that's it. I think that's about 15 minutes. Thanks.